This is Edge Cases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Wolf French.
And what's our topic this week, Wolf?
Backup.
Oh, backup.
I know, very exciting.
No. Okay. Very good. So I don't believe we have any follow-up this week?
Yeah, I'm going to push off my follow-up next week.
You have secret follow-up? You have follow-up I don't know about?
I guess I do, yes. I didn't think it was that stinky, but if you want to put it that way.
Yeah. Or maybe I just forgot. Which is why it would be good if I had it in a separate place that I could look it up.
Are you trying to do a segue there?
Trying. Probably not succeeding.
Okay.
All right. So what do you have for us about backup, Wolf?
Okay. Well, I thought I kind of run through, I don't know about you, but when I think of like Mac and backup and type of stuff, first thing that pops into my mind is Time Machine, which is, do you run Time Machine, Andrew?
I do.
Okay. Got it.
And I've actually, and I believe you just tweeted about this recently as well, but while I haven't used it for repopulating a whole drive, I've definitely used it for when I've accidentally deleted files.
Yes.
That's helped me several times over the past couple of years. Very, very useful.
Okay. So the archiving version of like accidental deleting or corruption or whatever that has saved your bacon sometimes.
Yes, the ongoing saving of it and the ability to remember older versions.
Yes, that is key. And yeah, that's that is on my list of things to talk about, and I'm glad you brought that up. Obviously, Time Machine is Apple's backup solution. It's very integrated, very automatic. Basically, it's, you know, one of the really nice things about Time Machine is that, you know, you fire up a new Mac, and basically it's hungry for a big empty hard drive. It's so you plug a big empty hard drive in and say, hey, it's a very eager, like, you want to use this for a backup? And
right.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you need, is that type of level of like ease of use where you can tell your normal user, your normal person saying, hey, you know, just buy a big empty hard drive. Just buy, not even empty, just like buy a hard drive, plug it in. Hopefully it's like formatted correctly or something like that, not like FAT16 or something. And then all I had to do is plug it in, and they'll get it, and Time Machine will hopefully do the rest. And it has really great UI. Like, I've seen normals successfully use Time Machine to go back in time and restore old files very effectively. So I think Apple's done a very good job in terms of those two aspects of Time Machine. So your primary machine is a notebook, right, Andrew?
Yes.
Yeah. So that means that, and this is actually interesting. I guess there's this newish aspect of Time Machine called Mobile Time Machine, which is something that Apple kind of rolled in behind the scenes. I think it was in 10.8, where even if you're not plugged in to your Time Machine volume, that it actually Time Machine will actually copy your files. To another part of your hard drive. So you don't get any of the redundancies. Like, you think of backup type thing. It was like, oh, what happens if my hard drive fails? But as you point out, one of the big use cases of Time Machine is not just when your hard drive fails, but also be able to go back in time and to pull out the archival version of something that, you know, you deleted and you actually didn't mean to delete and so forth. And I think 10.9 gets even, at least 10.8. Yeah, I should take that back. 10.8 was pretty nice in that they kind of use it as a buffer that, you'll archive locally until you can plug into your backup hard drive. And so this, you know, they call it Mobile Time Machine. I think, you know, like the behind the scene process is actually called MTMD for Mobile Time Machine Daemon. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't also work on things like iMacs. Like if you unplugged, you know, you have your stationary iMac and you unplug your hard drive for a day or two and plug it back in. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't work the same way. Don't necessarily think it's tied only to MacBooks.
Well, and it's funny that it's mobile, but in fact it is an even more local version of Time Machine.
Than
regular Time Machine.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that. That's a good point. Interesting thing in 10.9 is that the problem with them backing up your files locally is that these things can be pretty resource intensive, especially if you're dealing with virtual machines and big like encrypted disk images that are huge or whatever. This would freak me out, especially when doing the edge cases audio type stuff, is that Logic likes to burn a lot of disk space. And I would find myself running low on my SSD space. And that's because the mobile backups were chewing up all the room. And so the Apple way around this was to lie to you and say, oh, you have, they remove, in 10.9 Mavericks, they remove the amount of space that, that those backups take in the Finder. And they say, oh, yeah, those 20 gigs that mobile Time Machine is using locally, yeah, no, you got them. And, you know, it's actually a good lie. And I linked to this once I figured it out. Because it was funny, because, like, at 10.8, when I was on 10.8, I had, like, I don't know, like, 10 gigs free. It's kind of red zone type thing. Like, not, well, maybe yellow zone, orange zone, something like that. That it was definitely kind of low on space. And then I saw 10.9, all of a sudden, I have 25 gigs free. I'm like, oh, or something like that. And it was just because it was lying to me. It now excludes that mobile Time Machine. And they kind of make sense, because as you get low on disk space, it will start purging extra copies, which is actually a pretty nice feature.
Yeah, well, it's nice, but it would be, as a power user, I'd really rather that I was given some sort of warning that I was losing data, that this destructive step was taking place.
Yeah, that is a good point. And although, you know, I really like Time Machine's archival algorithm in terms of how it decides to record things. It's one of these things that's only. This is pretty bad. I was going to actually trot out like how floating point math is implemented as an easy to understand metaphor. But I realize that's probably not a good metaphor at all for most people. But anyway, it's the idea.
Well, this is a developer show.
It is a developer show. So. But it was, yeah. So maybe it would make sense that. IEEE 754 floating point arithmetic is like, the idea is that, you know, as you have that floating point, the decimal is like, it has pretty high accuracy for the first few decimal points, and it gets less and less accurate as it goes. And so as you trail off, it just gets wildly more inaccurate.
Right.
And Time Machine is similar in that it keeps like hourly snapshots, and then I think it keeps daily. Once you pass that 24-hour window, then includes this dailies, and then it includes weeklies and monthlies. Anyway, I've been really happy with this kind of back-off algorithm in terms of giving you a very long time span in the past, yet pretty high fidelity. Because it's one of the two. It's like you really need to go really back far in time because you delete something a few months ago that you realize you just need. Or it's something, oh man, I just deleted that file, or just trashed it somehow. Like, and it was good an hour ago. And so it's a really good trade-off.
Right. It needs that trade-off or other, because it's optimizing there for disk space, because otherwise you'd chew through your backup drive pretty quickly.
Right.
And I've noticed, my backup drive is, I don't know exactly how many terabytes, but it lasts a long time before it runs out. And it you know, we wouldn't do that if it were saving everything every minute.
Exactly.
And I do remember one thing that John Siracusa has said in one of his many long podcasts is that Time Machine, once it does fill the drive, that's one of the algorithms that it doesn't do well. That it doesn't do well with deleting backups and then saving new backups.
Oh, right,
so
right, yes.
You're really better off just never filling the drive.
Oh, wasn't it more that it's like it was more of a time capsule thing, right? Because that's really something that's separate. It wanted to do a purge and wouldn't quite make it, and was basically then it would try to do the next backup and it wouldn't quite make that one, and it was some sort of like a failure algorithm actually.
Was it more along the lines of dealing with the network? Excuse me.
I don't know. It was definitely time capsule related because I just recently was looking at my console logs, and it had to purge like one of my oldest backups. And I noticed that here it is when we're recording this, it's mid-November, and my oldest backup is January. So that's almost a full year's worth of backup. So it's doing a good job of in terms of clearing out old backups, but still trying to keep the maximum old date for me. But that's local. Time Machine, and that's actually one of the bullet points I'll get to. Time Capsule is such a sad story because it could be great, but that's what I was talking about now. So Time Capsule is, I mean, it could be pure Apple. Apple is best, right? That it's it it has a good story. Like, everyone needs a Wi-Fi router anyway. So, well, I guess maybe not if you get it, you know, the cheap one that's included with your Kmodem or whatever. But assuming that everyone needs a good one, you go out and buy this, and it has a built-in hard drive, and it's just going to be doing all this automatic stuff for you. And unfortunately, Time Capsule has always been such a sad story. I have personally, I know a bunch of people with them, and I've warned all of them to stay away from them now. I think pretty much they've all given in. It's like, I don't know of a one that's lasted more than, I would say, a year and change. In terms, before, not that the hardware doesn't last it, but just before it, like, eats itself, or doesn't, just mysteriously stops backing up anymore. It's, because this would be, like, the ideal equipment to buy for your parents or something, or any normal, where you're like, oh, you need a backup, and you're not going to plug into a hard drive or whatever. It's like, here's your Time Capsule, done and done.
So if they're normals, what are we?
Oh, we're geeks, man.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not. We
like super normals or paranormals or anything.
I would buy paranormal. Just because it has negative connotations.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
The early Time Capsules had like AFS problems. Like, one of the, you know, a good ideas about Time Capsules that you could, you know, it's your Wi-Fi router, and it's your backing up to it, and at any time you just could close your lid on your MacBook and walk out the door. And it's not like a normal hard drive where it's like, oh my god, you disconnected me, now I'm going to corrupt your file system.
Right.
It's supposed to deal with that seamlessly and, you know, be designed for it. But it really wasn't. And it also had, there was like things about the Apple Files, AFP, Apple File Protocol, that was like, wasn't actually good enough for Time Machine. Now, Apple fixed that at the protocol level. They had to, I think, roll out a new version of the protocol. But still, Time Machine just eventually doesn't work. Eventually, something goes wrong all the time. I'm sorry, Time Capsule eventually doesn't work. Time Machine, locally, it has its own flaws, but you can keep it running, given my simple step program that I will be telling you about a little bit later.
This one weird tip?
We already used that joke, man.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. I mean, last episode. Come on. So I included a blog entry about the mobile Time Machine and how it interacts with Finder and 10.9, about how it lies to you. So I'll include a link to that in the show notes. Really, we already said everything about that, so don't feel like you actually have to read it. This includes a little bit more facts. I would say that Time Machine, in terms of UI, is pretty great, but under the hood, it has some pretty bad problems. Probably the biggest one, and one that, you know, I think Time Machine rolled out in 10.5, whatever cat that was. I think Leopard. And
yes.
And I was fully expecting that Apple would have fixed, you know, quote unquote, fix this by now, but it's not transactional. I think we talked before about how, like, NTFS and other file systems can be transactional, where you can actually say, a program can say, I want to look at this file, I want, you know, stop the world for me. It's like, what's that? There was, like, some weird movie where, like, if you had this magic pocket watch, like, time would stop for you, it would stop for everyone else, but you could walk around and still, like, you know, look at your corporate competitors' notes and figure out, you know, how you could beat them to market or something like that. I forget what, it's like a movie from the 70s or something. I'm going to see if I can dig that up and link to it. It's pretty fun. Okay. But the basically, you want your backup software to kind of do that, where, like, it has the Magic Pocket Watch, and it opens it up, and the world stops for everyone but it. So it can crawl the file system, and it can look at it, and write and copy it to another disk. And but, you know, this magic virtualization software, that world keeps on going on. And really what it's doing is this, it's kind of like pointing at a point in the journal and saying, okay, you can read the file system from here, and I'll keep I won't let it roll off the end while you're reading it or whatever. And so that allows you to get a consistent snapshot. Time Machine, and because HFS and HFS Plus doesn't support this, and I mean, it does have journal, but this needs to be kind of rolled in the file system level, is that you always had the problem, and this is especially a problem with the big, I guess, what's the big Microsoft email client? Outlook, right? And not Outlook. I want to say Outlook. Oh,
it wasn't called Outlook. It was called something else.
It's still around, right? But it's like, I haven't...
I think they know that... yes, they replaced it with Outlook again, I think.
Okay, anyway.
They got rid of it.
Anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, they had a different name, and I don't remember what it is.
Okay. But so, I mean, it used to be the kind of the standard design for mail programs was that you have this big honking mail database. And this was kind of like the Time Machine worst-case scenario, because Time Machine would, like, it couldn't stop the world. So it would basically walk a live file system. So inconsistent, and so it wouldn't get a consistent snapshot of it. It would just start walking and hope for the best. And your mail database, you know, you have a lot of people have it configured to check email once a minute, and it would walk up to this 6 gigabyte file and like, oh, you're changing. Can I copy you? Oh, okay, I'll come back later. And then come back an hour later. Hey, oh, you're still busy. Oh, okay. And like, it could never actually get to the point where it could actually copy it and make a consistent copy. I don't know what it did at that. Actually, they explained it dub-dub. It wasn't good. I think it just blindly copied to hope for the best or something like that. Or maybe it didn't copy at all. Anyway, it was not a great... a great deal. And it would really be nice if Apple could also kind of punt on this and do, they already have this, you know, the one big HFS lock that Syracuse talks about a lot, and it could actually leverage this right to as a bottleneck to kind of give a transactional API on this really crappy file system.
Oh, yeah, that would be a really bad experience at the user level, though.
I'm not saying that you hold the lock for an hour, but at least they have a bottleneck they could potentially leverage for this type of stuff. But another problem with it, and it's a design choice, and it is good and bad, is that Time Machine is event-based, and it uses FS events. And the idea here is that so it can be up to date and kind of, you know, as you're making changes to the file system, it can get those events handed to it and can make little notes like, oh, I better back up this file. Oh, I better back up that file, whatever. And the problem is when those events get dropped or otherwise misunderstood. And Michael Tsai makes a good point that this is problematic. And he linked, it's okay. So this, I guess I blogged to it and blogged about this a long time back, and he linked to it, and actually I found it, I actually forgot I blogged about it. That this guy Alan Snyder wrote on the file system developers list on how it was really easy to go through a series of steps that weren't very difficult at all, where you could create a file that Time Machine would not notice was ever created and would never back it up.
Yeah,
and it was a simple matter of creating a directory and backing it up, and then creating a file, then renaming that directory, creating a file in it, then renaming it back. And for some reason, that would be enough that Time Machine would never notice that file was ever created. It would never back it up. And so the safe way to do this is actually to do, when you go to do a backup, is to do a full file system scan, where you just do this recursive thing where you go through each and everything. And Michael Tsai linked to a file system API I actually hadn't heard of. It's called FTS. And I guess for something for like file system traversal system or something. And apparently it's fairly efficient. And supposedly that's what SuperDuper uses. At least he does for DropDMG, his app. In my blog posting there, I went on to say that Time Machine is great, but it has enough quirks and failure scenarios that I first reach for my nightly SuperDuper backup, and then I use Time Machine's backup only when I need to go back further in time than yesterday or rescue a file that hasn't made it to my nightly backup yet. So here we have like the scenario. Time Machine, as you've experienced, has this great ability to reach really far back in time, or is really recent, but it's not a whole solution. It's not a whole story. And that's really problematic because it seems very close to a whole story. And it's almost enough to lull you into a false sense of security, but it's not one. And so you need to know that going into it. Oh, I already mentioned how Time Capsule is a really sad story. So don't put your eggs in the Time Capsule basket. I myself have never purchased a Time Capsule. I only have the airport base stations, and it's unreliable. And so Apple does have this thing called software RAID. So RAID stands for Redundant Array of Independent Disks. Back in the old days, it was inexpensive disks, but then Enterprise got involved and they weren't inexpensive anymore. And so the first thing that when you talk about RAID in terms of when you're talking about backups is that RAID is not a backup. And I think everyone who's listening to this already knows this, but as you mentioned, backups are good for accidental computing. When you delete something and you're like, oh, I didn't want to do that, and then you want to go back in time. What, of course, with a RAID is that the entire idea is that it's writing all your changes to do two or more disks at once. So there is this, you can't actually go a second back in time, let alone a few months. It's just all your data is already gone. So, and I was going to refer to my tweet here, and which you already referenced that, yes, back in July, and so recording this in mid-November, back in July, I deleted a bunch of files I didn't mean to, and which is actually very unlike me. I was actually trying to clear up some Dropbox space, and apparently, past me had a stroke or something, because instead of just moving it to my desktop or something, just outright delete those files. And this would have been...
Tisk.
I know. This would have been a fine story, really, because Dropbox has archival features where it can now store some backups for you too, but there was a lot of files, and I don't even know, this was a long time ago, so I don't know if that would have been great. But so the first thing I reached for there was my Time Machine backup, and sure enough, it was there, and it was a good story, and the user interface served me well, and it was basically a totally painless experience, so that was great. Anyway, other than the kind of, you know, adrenaline rush of like, okay, would these files even be here? Because I didn't know when I deleted them or what happened there.
Sure.
So so RAID is not a backup, and so backup is really about accidental computing. So RAID is not that. RAID is mostly about extending your uptime, so that hardware failures doesn't mean downtime. That's really what it's about.
Which is a deal, right? I mean, if part of your thing is, well, I do a backup for the sake of, or I do different kinds of backups for the sake of, well, I can get back up and running quickly.
Right.
Then, you know, Time Machine won't necessarily be your solution, because it takes a while for Time Machine to give you back your hard drive after a crash or after whatever.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue to the importance of bootable backups. So, I've done a whole Time Machine restore. Have you, Andrew?
I have not.
Yeah, it's a slow story. This was back in the day of DVDs, so it's like, you know, you boot off your fresh hard drive that's replaced your failed hard drive. Then you have to install the system, which itself will take maybe, I don't know, an hour or something like that.
Right.
And then you point the installer, which again, to Apple's credit, they integrated very nicely as part of the operating system install, that you say you point it at your Time Machine volume and say, yes, I want to restore from there. And that takes a good long while. I mean, that's you know, copying all those files, that's the overhead of all that bandwidth is going to, just by the nature of it, is going to take a while. But I don't know if Time Machine is slower or whatever. It takes a good long time to copy all those files back onto your internal hard drive or whatever went bad.
Well, and it's copying them one by one. I bet that has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a bootable backup, your internal hard drive fails or whatever, and you're like, oh, that sucks, and then you reboot and you keep going.
Right into it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not totally ideal, because you can – probably the worst case scenario there is that you do a nightly backup or something, and then in the middle of the day, your hard drive fails, and maybe Time Machine has run a few times there. So now it's like you boot off your internal hard drive, but now Time Machine is actually newer than your backup drive, and now Time Machine is a little bit ahead of you, so you have to figure out what files you changed, and that's a bit of a pain. But still, you haven't lost any data officially.
Yeah, but it's almost impossible for you to find all those files that have changed since then.
Yeah, you're definitely relying on your human memory at that point, which is highly failable.
the least reliable part of your system.
good point. So I mentioned SuperDuper, which is my tool of choice. Carbon Copy Cloner is very similar, and I've heard good things about, just for whatever reason.
Wow, that's still around?
Oh, and it's gone on rev. I know, you seem to be surprised.
Shouldn't it be called Coco Cloner now?
Oh, Coco Copy Cloner. I don't think it actually was ever written in Carbon, but
no, probably not.
Yes, the Carbon is a misnomer there.
Yes.
But so how I like to structure these things, that I have my backup drive, and I have my internal drive, and both, I'm pretty sure Carbon Copy Cloner can do this, but definitely Super Duper, is that you could have one backup volume that does double duty as a Time Machine destination and a Super Duper clone of your internal hard drive. I'd recommend not doing that.
Ouch, no, I wouldn't do that.
I would recommend partitioning that drive, which is kind of a pain. But as Dave Nanian pointed out to me, is that if you actually, Time Machine relies heavily on hard links and how it pulls off its magic. And thing is, HFS Plus doesn't have hard links. And
right.
So they emulate it. And this is
terrible.
I'm amazed it works. I'm just amazed it works. But I guess that's not something you want to say about your file system. But
the other thing is, I mean, one of the other scenarios, I don't know if you're going to get to it, is recovering from a disk that's had a failure, and a mechanical failure. And if you, anytime you keep one of these other systems on the same disk as a second system, you're reducing the ability of those systems to be redundant backups.
Right.
So I would not, just personally, if I had any choice in the matter, if I had two systems, I'd put them on two different hard drives instead of partitioning the same hard drive, because then if that backup hard drive goes bad, you've just lost two different redundant systems instead of just one.
That's true. It's just, I'm not going to really plug in two extra hard drives for the purpose of backup. So I've made that call, and you're right. That's a risk I'm taking.
Well, if you're just not willing to do what it takes.
Oh, here I'm all backup machismo, but I see you're calling me out.
I do for my Super Duper, I have a separate drive than the Time Machine.
Oh, look at you. Okay. Well, I'm not willing to do that step. But I do have some mitigating techniques that maybe you'll cut me some slack with. So just in terms of file system complexity. So it's like how hard links are actually implemented in HFS Plus is that it's some hidden directory at the root of your hard drive that it writes out like a file for every hard link. And HFS Plus, like the file system knows to look at those hidden files, and it's really bad. It used to be, maybe it's gotten better since then, but it used to be that this one directory at the root of your hard drive would have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of files in one level.
That might be why it's so slow, too.
Could be. But it takes so very little. And the thing is, like, with the Time Machine volume, especially when you really fill it up and you use it for a long time, is that there are a lot of files there, because it's hard linking everything, and it represents your hard drive at very many points of time, and so any little corruption of the hard drive is very prone to take down the entire house of cards. Like, this is exactly where HFS Plus is probably the weakest, when it has to deal with this amount of data and use this kind of bolted on hard linking technology. Like I said, it's amazing. I'm amazed it works as well as it does, but I have had, Time Machine has this bad rep of this randomly eating its backups. I mentioned how my Time Machine history goes back almost a solid year now. What I didn't mention in that is that that was because of extra efforts I took to work around HFS Plus's weaknesses, and that I've had the Time Machine just randomly eat itself, even within that time frame. And I had to restore from my backup in order to get my history back.
So you're backing up your Time Machine drive?
I back up my backup, else? Yes. And so that's
okay,
where
that gets you some cred.
Oh, okay, thank you.
It really does.
And I even wrote a tool for this. But it wouldn't be an Educase episode unless I wrote some code.
Where did you back it up? Where do you back it up to? Another drive?
Yeah, so I have my external backup hard drive, and I have these really cool little I call them drive toasters. I think I talked about them before, maybe not. But the one I'm using is from a company called NewerTech. It's called the Voyager Q, and Q stands for like quad interface or something. And it looks like a toaster. It looks like not really like an old 50s retro toaster or anything like that, or like a Syracuse class toaster. I guess it's cool that there's a Syracuse class toaster, but it's you take a bare hard drive, a bare SATA hard drive, and you the slide in the top. It's not, it doesn't have a fan or anything. It's all air cooled, and it's meant for this, for rapidly connecting and disconnecting, like kind of treating hard drives as big floppies. And so I have that, and I back up to one of those, and then I have another one of those that I use to back up my backup hard drive to, and I do that on a weekly basis.
Okay, and that's just a straight copy?
It's a straight copy. And
because you're not using like Time Machine to version backup your Time Machine drive.
Right. That I don't think actually works.
So when you did have to restore your Time Machine, you did lose some history.
Because I did lose probably a week's worth of history.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, so the tool that I wrote for this is called Clone Drive, and it's on my GitHub, and I'll link to it.
That's right. We haven't linked to something from you.
I know. It's
for a while there, you were doing that every week.
Yeah, I know. I have to get back in the game. Cool. So I used to use Disk Utility has this restore functionality, which allows you to point one drive at another, and it will block copy that over. And it turns out that doesn't work anymore with file vault 2 volumes.
Really?
Yep. Yep. And Disk Utility in general, I don't know if it's just if it's suffering from bit rot or something, but Disk Utility seems to be failing kind of weirdly more and more type stuff. Like, I had a big problem with it dealing with software RAID volumes on 10.7. Apple basically just broke the ability to FSCK those volumes altogether. And that would work again on 10.8, I presume on 10.9. But this, in general, Disk Utility seems to be having problems, and I happen to know that it is undergoing a rewrite, so maybe in 10.10 we'll get a new Disk Utility that has some new goodness to it, that is a little bit more stable and actually doesn't just randomly break on different point releases. But anyway, I couldn't rely on that anymore, so I wrote this utility called Clone Drive, and it does pretty much... Have you ever used the tool DD?
DD like a utility?
Yeah.
Command line utility?
It's an old Unix utility.
No.
Okay. It's just basically a block copy utility. And it's just a very specific kind of flavor of DD where it... Maybe it stands for disk duplicator or something? I don't know. I think it actually predates that. But anyway. Clone Drive, it actually works too well. That disk utility, when you use disk utility store, it understands that these are actually separate drives, and these drives have something known as a GUI ID partitioning table or GPT, and every instance of these partition tables should actually have its unique UUID, so or unique GUID, which is the entire idea, whether universally unique. And when you, even if you're cloning a drive that you're supposed to have its own unique GUID. And my drive just blindly copies blocks, so you actually get totally bit identical drives, and that actually confuses the file system, the Mac, that if you have two drives with the same GUID, that it doesn't know what to do with the second drive, so it just ignores it, which is probably the best thing you could hope for. But anyway, the point is that my utility, it does what Disk Utilities Restore used to do, except better. One of the nice things it does is that it does the verification process that the restore functionality had, and it does the block copy, so it's much faster than trying to copy individual files or walking the file system for all that, especially on Time Machine volumes, because the directory structure. And first off, you know, the hard link support is kind of bolted on HFS Plus, and it suffers from too many layers of indirection, so it's just inherently slow. And second, those Time Machine volumes have massive amounts of files, so walking those are really slow too, so you really want to block copy there. And one other nice thing is that it releases a source drive after the copy, but before the verification process. So basically in half the time, you can pull out the source drive and start using it for backups again, which is important because I'm using a 2 terabyte drive for backing up. And so to do a full block copy of it takes, I don't know, 14 hours, something like that. And I do that weekly. So there is a window of time when I don't get to run my Time Machine backups, but and also my SuperDuper backups. And the other really interesting, really nice kind of fallout of this, kind of this brute force approach, is that it forces a read and it forces a write it forces a read of every single block on the source volume, and forces a write of every single block on the destination volume, and then it verifies integrity with a checksum. And this is, you know, we don't have ZFS with its auto healing and all that. So when you want have a bad block, you want to fail fast and you want to find it fast. And so this is kind of, you know, poor man's ZFS, where you actually are at least testing that the blocks are readable and writable.
Sure.
You still can have silent failure that a bit can be flipped by Cosmic Gray. And those checksum, you know, you'd really need like file system level checksums at that point to catch that. But and that you do need ZFS for. So it's not a complete solution, but at least you know that everything was readable, everything was writable. I do have some things that I need to do on it, and I'm probably updated to-do list. It's slow, like I said, it takes 14 hours to run, and I would be right now just like reads and then writes, reads and then writes. I really should try to overlap the reads and writes. And I also want to add a feature that that will read the source drive twice before it commences as a backup. Because usually what happens is that you have two drives. You have the source drive, which has the newer backup. And then you have the destination drive that contains a backup that's good, but it's outdated. It's probably a week out of date. And the worst thing that could happen is that you start backing up your drive to the backup. And you get partially withered through and you hit an IO error. So now you've just destroyed, you know, your original backup is obviously has a failure in it, but now you've also destroyed your backup. So I want to add a feature call in that basically it reads the source drive twice and does a checksum on that, so that way it can at least ensure it gets a repeatable read before it even tries to then overwrite the destination drive. But of course that adds a lot more time to the backup, and it'll be interesting to see how much time that adds and whether it's actually worth it.
Well, and the only way to really, if you have an IO error on the destination drive, that wouldn't solve that.
Right, that's true. But yeah, that point, you know, just throw away the destination drive, I'll just throw in a new one, and it's really the IO error on the source drive that I know that, then throw it away and don't try to override the destination drive.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then I won't want to talk. Oh, so
unless you only get the IO error on the second run through,
right. Would have to be a third run through because it reads twice for the yes. Like I said, this is House of Cards, man. So I know that you use an online backup service, and I know it isn't Backblaze. Is it CrashPlan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they had that sale.
Yeah.
So I'm paying, you know, like a couple of bucks for the whole year. Mm-hmm. And I was having some problems with it that I'm still not sure I'm completely satisfied with. After an OS update or an iTunes update, mm-hmm. it started sending everything from iTunes over again. Mm. And I would bet it's because some sort of metadata changed in iTunes, and CrashPlan was not able to handle that very well. So it tried to send it all up again, which meant that, you know, it was a month, you know, months before it would be done again. And that was not great. So I finally turned that off. I finally made it, you know, excluded those directories just so that it would not take months again to do everything. Mm-hmm. The trouble with sending stuff up through the internet, if you don't have a really fast uplink connection, is that, and I think you were talking about this earlier, I mean, if I had a failure today, if I had a failure any day, the backup at the other server would never be up to date. Mm-hmm. And would almost, what I've seen is it would almost never be substantially up to date. I'm always a couple of days away from it being done.
Wow.
So really, if I had to pay for this at a regular, at the rate that they, you know, they should be charging me, the normal market rate, I would really have to think twice about it, because I'm not sure I would ever want to rely on this. Mm-hmm. Because I could never restore from it. Mm-hmm. I could never be sure it has the file that I want there. Now, it probably will, especially for something that I know I changed a while ago. It would probably be up there. So I might use this as, say, a third string or a fourth string backup, just to be sure, you know, if the house burns down, that there's still something somewhere else, mm-hmm. which is very important to have.
Yeah.
But I'm still not, I can't say I'm really satisfied with with the way it works at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I'm pretty much on that boat. I have not used CrashPlan myself. Two things about it is that didn't used to be written in Java, and do you know if it still is?
I believe it still is.
Okay, so you need to install Java, Apple's Java runtime, or to actually run it.
You need to install Apple's Java runtime, and when I look at what's it called, the thing that you can see your processes with,
the activity monitor.
Activity monitor, yeah. It's always near the top of the list.
Okay.
You know, all the time. Machine runs hot when that's going. So it's, you know, it may be saving me, maybe potentially saving my data, but it is probably, you know, costing some of the lifetime of this machine by having it running all the time and having that be a significant, not a huge, but a non-trivial part of the constant activity in the background for this thing. And again, that I find that unfortunate as well. I think I would bet that if it weren't Java based, that would be more of a chance that it would be more efficient.
Okay. Right? Yeah. And the other thing that is a point in its favor is that I believe that you don't need to actually use their service, that you can like find a backup buddy or something, and you can point it at another like CrashPlan server or something of your own control.
Yeah, I suppose. But for me, that's unrealistic.
Okay.
I don't think it's unrealistic for most people. Like, you know, what, I'm going to send all my files to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of it is that this is something where I pay for it, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore. Whereas if I have to maintain my own server, then that's something else I have to worry about.
Good point.
So, and you know, if I'm going to do that, I don't know if I would use their software for it either.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Yeah. One of CrashPlan's competitors is Backblaze, which I've used in the past. I'm not currently using. And they had this really great post about their backup technology. I believe they call them storage pods. And it's really interesting if you're kind of like interested in like creating servers that have kind of focus on high capacity kind of backup systems where you just kind of. Well, they fit Backblaze's use very well. It's not great for a lot of uses, but probably most uses, but it's really interesting. I'll link to that in the show notes. So Backblaze is similar to CrashPlan, that it's, like, I believe, $5 a month for unlimited backups. And surprisingly, like, I think they've been in business for about 5 years now or something like that. So it's not one of these VC-funded things that, like, EverPix, where it's like, oh, we're going to offer you this fantastic deal, and oops, I guess we didn't get the next round, and now we're shutting down.
Sorry.
So they obviously, you know, it almost seems too good to be true. Like, but they've you know, invented their own technology. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's you don't outsource your core competency type stuff. It's like, you know, they put in the work of inventing these storage pods, and they're serious about this is their core competency, and they've done a good job with it. And so I don't expect them to go out at the same time soon. And so that's pretty great. That said, I am not currently a client of theirs. I was in the past. And I had in general, I really like the service, and I wouldn't have too much of a problem to recommend it. Their Mac software is a little bit weird, could use some work. They're nice in that they back up everything by default, except that if you look at the exclusion list that they have by default, that they don't back up disk images or virtual machines by default. And those disk images can get quite large, especially if using an encrypted disk image. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, VMs, so you need to watch out for that. The interesting thing is that they allow you to encrypt your backups, which is great, but it's kind of weird because, like, when you install their software, the encryption is off by default. So you have to, but the problem is that when you install their software, it immediately starts trying to back up. So there's this race going on where you're like madly trying to, you know, set a password for your files, and you don't know, like, how much of your stuff has been uploaded, if any at all, before you set it. And so it's almost like you really, really need to kind of like install software, then turn off your Wi-Fi, and then like enter a password, and then turn it on. But even then, it's like, has it copied files other places? I don't know really how it works. And so it's kind of weird.
I mean, I mean, the backup that I did, I mean, it took months for it to update everything. So if you lose a few hours worth of backups before you set the password, it doesn't seem to me like you'd be losing that much in the way of files transferred. They would just throw those out and start over again.
Yeah, but if that's, you know, the password, your password, unencrypted password file that's gone over the wire and now sitting on, you know, that's...
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
And they do have this thing where they don't back up your network drives, which really makes a lot of sense. You don't want people to, you know, this pointed at their shared family drive and you have five Macs and they're all backing up the same data or whatever. But it's a gotcha type stuff. So if you're at home and you have a Synology box, you can't like point Backblaze at it and have it to do the right thing. And also they delete backups of drives that aren't connected after 30 days. And so that could be a potential. You think you have a backup on something and your drive dies, and I don't know what happens then. It's like, do you have 30 days or to restore it or what happens? And so Backblaze is a good service for what it is, but it has a few gotchas. And if you're on top of it, it's worthwhile. And like you and CrashPlan, I think it's probably good for a tertiary type of system where when your house gets hit by a meteor and you just have a smoking crater left, then you can have them FedEx you a USB drive back and you can get back in business. And hopefully you weren't in the house when you got hit by that meteor. Often you'll hear you talk about backups to people and like, oh, let's throw everything in Dropbox. Well, I have about 2.5 terabytes of data and that won't possibly fit into Dropbox. And even so, I don't trust them enough. You know, they are VC funded and they're great service. I really like them and I use them extensively for syncing. And I have used their retrieval service for getting back files I've deleted. Is really great, but this is not what Dropbox is for. So it's not, you know, it can kind of be abused for this, but I wouldn't recommend it. And so there's this other piece of software called Arc from Haystack Software.
Right.
And Arc is interesting because it's almost the epitome of like old school software, like, you know, not in-app purchase crap, not... no gimmicks, and a lot of good, solid computer science engineering. So Arc is this backup software that's designed to back up all your files to Amazon's S3. And you pay for everything. You pay for the app to use it, and I think it's like $40 or something like that. You pay Amazon to host your files, and you pay right. Amazon more the more data you give them to host. So it's not like a all-you-can-eat buffet that you have with CrashPlan or Backblaze.
You've just got a regular S3 account. It's not like this application or, you know, the guy who runs it has a special relationship with Amazon. No, it's just you have a regular S3 account.
Mm-hmm. And he has gone ahead and he's documented the file format that Arc uses for storing all your files into S3. He even has on GitHub a command line tool for viewing your files from your S3 bucket. Works with S3. I believe it works with S3 with the reduced redundancy service, and it also works with Amazon's Glacier service, which is is a lot less expensive, but retrieval is expensive and you have to wait for it.
Right.
And
which might still be worth it.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, a few months ago I bought Arc. And I ran it, and I think it took 2-3 days, maybe more. I actually forgot to time it to back up everything. And now this was just my MacBook Air. This is not my 2.5 terabyte Mac Pro that where I have all my data on, really. But it ended up, I got the bill from Amazon. I had no idea really how much it would cost. I did target Glacier for this. It ended up costing me $5.83 for the initial upload. And now it's been running me about $1.40 a month to store all that data with Amazon. So I've been pretty happy with it.
Well, how much data?
This is only will be a maximum of 256 gigabytes because this is just my SSD on my MacBook Air. So not a lot of data, but kind of a core of what I'm currently working on, and not even my photos, because that has to be off on the Mac Pro.
Right.
But, you know, it's Arc seems to be like very old school type software. Oh, it's interesting that the format he uses is actually very Git-like, and actually even down to the idea of a content addressable storage system with very Git-like internally, with commits and blobs and trees and all that. So if you know how Git works internally, if you look at the file format documentation, he tells you it works like Git. So that's very interesting how he does that. Arc seems like a great app. I'm pretty satisfied with it, and I would, for our audience, I would recommend it over something like Backblaze or CrushPlan. That said, I feel kind of bad for Normals, because Time Machine gets you a heck of a lot of way there, but it's not infallible, and I do feel you kind of like need a bootable backup type system. And unfortunately, now you're mixing in things like Carbon Copy Cloner or Super Duper into the mix, which adds its own layer of complexity. And then you kind of want an offsite story as well. And Time Machine tends to eat its file system, so you kind of need to mix that with like something like Clone Drive, which is a command line tool, which is not meant for Nobles to use. It's meant for people like us. And then you need to kind of mix in something with like Arc, which Arc has a very serviceable UI, but still it's pretty geeky. And so I almost feel like it's a combination of like for Normals, it would need to be something like Time Machine plus Backblaze or CrashPlan. But there's no slam dunk solution here, which is really sad for Normals. Really, really, this is in the last Accidental Tech podcast, they talked about, you know, how Apple with iCloud and, you know, the EverPix, you know, they're bemoaning how EverPix died and how this is actually something that Apple could totally do. And, you know, Apple's Time Machine is in the position to do something perfect here, where they plug the holes of Time Machine and they can also do the offsite backup for you, maybe even for a considerable fee. But they're not going. They're not doing it, and they're not going to do it. I don't think.
No, I mean, this is not. I mean, Apple isn't doing it because Apple can't do it well, for their definition of well. I mean, you're talking about doing it for every Apple user, where many of them will not have the upload speeds that are necessary to do this within a reasonable amount of time. They will not have a reliable enough connection to do it, that they will, you know, Apple software would have to keep trying to send files over and over again because they keep getting transmission errors. They would turn off their machines for long periods of time. They would unplug drives. They would, you know, everything that you can imagine going wrong, they will go wrong. And then how do you tell a user who clicks OK to every dialog box that ever comes up, how do you explain to them, well, this is what technically went wrong, and this is the result of it, and this is what you have to do to make it right, or this is the ramifications of it not going right? I mean, it's just they can't do it. And I think if they could find a better way, you know, if upload speeds generally tend to get much better for most people, you know, for Time Warner gets a lot better, or LTE suddenly gets a lot better, you know, maybe they would start thinking about doing more for your average users. But it is, I mean, the reason that's complex and error prone and involved to do is for Normals, for anyone, is because it is, because there's no easy way to make all this happen. And you know, that's it. You know, the nice thing is that while, you know, you hear again, like Syracuse, if we mention his name three times, will he appear? if you hear him talk about it, you know, it, you know, it's a ticking time bomb for everybody, and that is true technically, but I suspect that there are a lot of users out there who use their machines relatively lightly and just never run into those. And you know, because if every single person you ever knew had a horror story about their drive dying, then there would probably be a lot more of a demand for this sort of thing, where I think most people just don't know about it. And so this is, it's the right thing to do if you want to be careful, but it may be overkill to, again, try to make this something that every single person has three redundant backups and two remote backups and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, the situation right now is not great, but there are reasons for it not being great. It's not just, well, Apple is lazy and decided not to do it.
Good. Yeah, that's a good pushback. Thanks, man.
And I think we're running a little late. So, yeah. All right. To see the show notes for this episode, go to edgecasesshow.com, all one word, /69, and we'll see you next time.